Jason, Caleb Williams started off hot. The Bears started off hot, and the Bears ended the way it seems to always end around these parts. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears lose 27-24 to the Vikings in their opener on Monday night here at Soldier Field. To get there, they gave up three touchdowns to first-time starter J.J. McCarthy in the fourth quarter, and Caleb Williams just kind of didn't have it after the first quarter.
The whole team didn't really have it after that first quarter. And it was one of those things, Patrick, where the Bears at one point, if you ever look at the ESPN GameCast and the win probability, I think you don't like it, right? I bring it up all the time, and you don't like it. Is that the dynamic here with the ESPN win probability?
I'm not as amused by it as you are.
Okay. Second half, at one point, the Bears have a 94.2% chance to win. And in reality, you know, if you hadn't watched the game and you just looked at the score and saw they're up 17-6 with about 12 minutes left, you'd be thinking, yeah, probably about 94% chance they win this game. But it didn't feel like that when you were watching it, because it felt tenuous the whole time after that first drive. That first drive looked really good. Caleb Williams is 6-for-6. He converts a third down with this just incredible pass on the right sideline to Odunze, I believe, and then converts another third down from the nine in running in for a touchdown. And everything looks perfect, and it looks so much better than it did last year, where they never scored a touchdown. They literally never scored a touchdown on the opening possession last year. Players were having to beg Shane Waldron and Matt Eberflus to script plays. This looked like it should look, but only for that first possession. Everything after that was turnover on downs, punts, field goal or missed field goal. There were four false starts in the first half. All of these pre-snap problems that Ben Johnson said they were in a good place on and had figured out, they haven't. And Caleb Williams, they had to also in the first half, by the way, burn a timeout to avoid a delay of game. And Caleb Williams said, you know, the communication, Ben Johnson was getting the plays in fast. We need to do better getting out of the huddle and get into the line. There's been a lot of that. It's been for months a lot of that. And Caleb Williams, he completes his first 10 passes, but then he's 8 for his next 20. And meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, J.J. McCarthy is starting to figure it out. And J.J. McCarthy, with Kevin O'Connell, who could win with practically any quarterback, it seems like, J.J. McCarthy arrives at a pretty good game that you alluded to when you talked about his three touchdowns. J.J. McCarthy only threw 20 passes, but he finishes with a 98.5 passer rating, which would have been hard to believe early in that game when they're going three and out. Two passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown. I mean, you have one quarterback in McCarthy who started out struggling and got on track, and you have another one in Williams who got off to a really good start, and then Ben Johnson couldn't keep him on track.
Right, and, you know, I mean, for me, that is that's the takeaway here, is that I don't think the result is that different than what I expected, 27-24 Vikings, but the way they got there, with the Bears looking like they had it figured out, and then they don't, and the Vikings figuring it out during the course of a game was, I think, particularly demoralizing. You know, let's not forget either, Jason, that Caleb Williams, through a series of calamities, takes the Bears from first and 10 at the 24-ish.
Minnesota 24.
At the end of the third quarter. Gets them to third and 30. Because he tried to throw the ball away and couldn't get it back to the line of scrimmage, which is a rule in the NFL and not in college. And we've seen him violate that rule before. They end up lining up a 50-yard field goal for Cairo Santos on the first play of the fourth quarter, I believe it was, Jason. And
yes,
it's a 50-yarder to give the Bears a 14-point lead.
20-6, it would.
And boy, you and I are sitting there going, man, like this is in the bag. Like, we should know better, but, you know, then Cairo doesn't hit the ball well. I talked to him. He said, you know, the contact just was bad. Misses the kick. And before you know it, Jason, in the next, like, 11 minutes of football time, the Vikings score three touchdowns. This thing got away from them so fast. And that's, again, that's another thing that's disillusioning. The defense played today without three starters. There was no TJ Edwards, no Jalen Johnson, and no Kyler Gordon. And with those three guys, this defense is going to be a lot better. But they were pretty good through the first three quarters and then just got absolutely figured out in the fourth.
When you say that it was not all that far off of what you expected, for me it really was offensively for the Bears, because it looks like it was just kind of whatever. It was kind of okay. They scored 24 points. That's kind of misleading, because seven of those points were on a Nashawn Wright pick six, and another seven were on a touchdown drive at the very end when the Vikings were already up 10. Not that it was irrelevant, but, I mean, you're sitting there on, what would that be, 10 offensive points going into the kind of that two-minute drill type scenario for Caleb Williams? That shouldn't be that bad. Caleb Williams shouldn't be this bad, even with a new coach. I mean, you look back to a year ago when he had his debut against the Titans, and it was a really bad game, and the Bears end up winning because the Titans just out-batted them.
They had a worse quarterback.
Yeah, they were just worse of a disaster. This is so much different than then. Caleb Williams got a pass for that and a lot of other performances last year because he's a rookie. You have a bad O-line. You have incompetent coaches. None of those things are true anymore. He's in his second season. He got the coach that he and everybody else wanted. He got the offensive line that he and everybody else wanted. The Bears put a ton of money into that. You still sit here, Pat, and he's got an 86.6 passer rating. He throws for 210 yards, a lot of that toward the end when it didn't really matter.
A lot of empty calories. Yep.
You look at, Ben Johnson phrased that as it seemed like, he really liked how Caleb started, and then the completions kind of seemed to dry up a little bit. And he also said that they just weren't on the – Ben Johnson also said they weren't on the same page in the running game. And that's another really troubling thing that you look at, because Caleb Williams had a nice game running, but no one else did. Caleb Williams ran six times for 58 yards, and that spikes their average. But other than that, I mean, DeAndre Swift, 3.1 yards per carry. DJ Moore gets a few carries back there, three carries for 8 yards. I mean, that is not the running game. Nothing about this offensively looked like what I expected for Ben Johnson, even taking into account that it was his debut.
There was a drive in the third quarter where DeAndre Swift really was putting his head down and pushing the pile. And, like, that's the DeAndre Swift that they need. And I don't know whether DeAndre Swift can do this through the course of a game. And the fact that they haven't given him a real competent backup probably means that he can't try to do that the whole game. But that was the only time all night when I felt like, oh, this run game's got a little something. And, you know, otherwise it wasn't. And Ben, you and I talk about this all the time. Ben is a running coach.
Yeah.
That then runs play action
passes.
Sonic
and Knuckles, man.
Yeah, and it must kill him to watch a running performance like that today. You mentioned Caleb was the Bears' best rusher.
Yeah.
He was only sacked twice all game. Both were in the fourth quarter. The first one was in the start. Was the first drive when they were down by 4 points or whatever it was. And then the other was when he stepped out of bounds while trying to throw the ball away. Against a defense that typically blitzes your pants off, that's not a bad showing, given that he averaged 4 sacks last year per game. How do you think he held up?
Well, he moved great in the pocket and under pressure. He looked like, I don't know how this comparison is going to sit with people, but he looked a lot like Justin Fields,
mm-hmm.
the way he was just avoiding people in the pocket. And there would be plays where it's like, oh, they got him this time. Nope. He's loose. He's free. I guess the difference between him and Justin is that Caleb is looking to throw still and did make some throws in those situations. But, I mean, I don't think that Caleb Williams running six times for 58 yards is part of the plan today. And if you look at the overall skew here, I don't think there was one designed run for him.
No, there was not.
Right?
There was not.
Okay, so all six were scrambles. That's what I thought. And then he took 2 sacks. So that tells you that they ran 43 pass plays and 20 run plays. I don't think that's the Ben Johnson offense.
Yeah, correct. But at least early on, the passes were so short that it felt very scheme-specific to this is how we're going to try and beat Brian Flores. And if anything, I think Brian Flores knew that Caleb wasn't going to sit back there and wait long enough to try something deep. And he really didn't. I mean, you know, one of the big plays, I think, of the game tonight was when the Bear, Nashawn Wright, I believe it was, committed a 43-yard pass interference penalty. And you don't get those unless you put the ball up like that. And the Bears didn't. You know, we talked about his accuracy, Jason. There was the 4th-and-3 pass to DJ Moore in the second quarter instead of kicking a field goal where he just led DJ Moore too much. And then Cole Kmet runs something similar later in the game, and Caleb does the same thing. You know, we can talk about the nuances of Caleb's game all we want, but at the end of the day, like, you got to make that throw, man. Like, maybe it's that simple. Is, you know, the gotta-have-it situations, he's got to have those.
There were throws, especially in the second half, where you're just sitting there like, how is he missing by that much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was something that kept coming up last year, too, and he has yet to give an answer that makes sense about his accuracy problems.
Especially because he was not an inaccurate quarterback in college.
That's all he ever says is, I've always been an accurate passer, so I don't really know what's going on right now.
What was the mood of Ben Johnson postgame, Jason?
Irritated, I think. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to sound like an obvious thing to say, but I don't think Ben Johnson takes losing very well, as opposed to maybe the last two coaches who... You know, Matt Eberflus and Matt Nagy, maybe it was just that they got used to it.
You lose 10 in a row, and how outraged can you be week to week?
Yeah, like the annual 6-game losing streak starts to kind of, you know, you become immune to it, I guess. Ben Johnson, I think there was just, I think you could feel him seething, and you could easily imagine what it would be that he's seething about. He's seething about a quarterback missing receivers. He's seething about a lead slipping away. And he's seething about just an overall offense that does not look like what Ben Johnson has built his career on. And this is where Ben Johnson is going to have to adapt, because Ben Johnson isn't coaching those powerhouse Lions offenses anymore with a veteran, established, multiple Pro Bowl quarterback in Jared Goff. Ben Johnson has to work with what he has, not what he wishes he had.
He said this when he first got here, and I try to remember it a lot. He said, you know, I've coached more bad teams than good teams. And when you look at his resume, he really has. I mean, that Dolphins run in. I'm telling you. But
Bears,
you know,
South.
Yeah, I mean, those Dolphins teams when he was there pre-Brian Flores were not good. And then he goes to Detroit, and he catches the back end of them being terrible, and then manages to be a major part of them turning things around. This isn't unfamiliar territory for him. This isn't Matt Nagy coming from the Chiefs, where everything was sunshine and roses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but his whole deal was, I know how to spot bad football. And, boy, I think there was a lot of bad football to spot.
Yeah, but, Patrick, if you want to feel Ben Johnson's mood, I mean, man, we've been studying this guy for so long. Mm-hmm. We've been studying this guy for a year, I would say. Like, early last season, probably started really studying him. And you learn about his journey. You learn about, you know, this process that he's been in for the last several off seasons where everyone, it seems like, wants to hire him.
Yeah.
And he turns down jobs. He turns down some jobs that look pretty good.
Yeah. The Commanders get on an airplane to go interview him, to offer him the job. And while they're in the air, he says, send him back.
I mean, who hasn't wanted a piece of Ben Johnson? And has stayed and been in a secondary role building Detroit into a contender, a mm-hmm. legitimate title contender.
Correct.
Regardless of what happened in week 1 with them. And then he chooses, out of all of these jobs, Patrick, he chooses this one. He says, this is the time. This is the time for me to go. This is the team for me to go to. He says in his introductory press conference that one of the biggest reasons was Caleb Williams. He said, this is a big piece in their favor that made me think this is a place we could win. You've read these quotes from him talking about being very picky about a job, about which job he would take, because he sees all these coaches take bad jobs, get fired after 3 years, and then they're out on their butt and they might not get another chance. everything builds to this, and then it falls flat. There's no way that you're right when you bring up the point that he's been through it before. And Dan Campbell, I talked to Dan Campbell Sunday, and Dan Campbell said, you know, back in 2022 when we started 1-6, and spoiler alert, they would go on to go 9-8 and almost make the playoffs. He said, when we started 1-6, people wanted me to fire Ben.
Right.
But I don't think that Ben Johnson thought he was walking into that type of situation with this. Right. And he shouldn't be in year four of a rebuild. He'd have every reason to think this should be kind of a ready-to-run team.
And it wasn't. It wasn't tonight. I think one of the things that was charming about the first half was, you just mentioned all this, you know, every Chicago fan's had their eye on Ben Johnson for a year and a half. Every Chicago fan has talked about Caleb Williams every day since the day he was drafted. It would have had to be a pretty tremendous outing tonight to live up to that sort of hype. And that first drive, boy, kind of did, didn't it? And then it was just kind of slowly, slowly deflating the rest of the way. Can we talk about the way the game ended, Jason?
Yeah, but I would just want to say one more thing, too, about Ben Johnson before we move on.
Yeah.
One thing you didn't see, I didn't see, correct me if I'm wrong, please, didn't see a lot of that trademark Ben Johnson creativity, you know, surprise plays, trick plays, anything like that. And I wonder if, you know, thinking back to like a month ago when he was talking about the Bills and he was saying, you know, he was saying about his game plan he ran against the Bills last season with Detroit, that this team isn't ready for that kind of sophisticated stuff yet.
No, trick plays are a privilege, and it's what happens when you can do the normal stuff right. They didn't do that. I mean, the closest they got to trickery today, Jason, was the Theo Benedict coming in as the extra blocker. And they send him in motion a couple of times when they flip the formation. But, you know, if that's as creative as it gets, that's not what we were promised.
Let's cut to the ending. What did you? Where do you want to pick up here as things fell apart and then the Bears tried to salvage it?
It was not part of the plan to get the ball with less than 10 seconds to play at the end of the game. And the reason for that is when the Bears scored to go down three, they had one timeout left. And the reason they had one timeout left, Jason, was because Ben had used one trying to challenge a fumble that wasn't a fumble earlier in the half.
Potential peanut punch that he was right to challenge that, don't you think?
It was close. I would have challenged it, but it did cost them dearly in the timeout department. So the Bears score with 2:02 to play, down three. They've got one timeout. So rather than go onside, they decide to kick deep. And the only way that makes sense, Jason, is if the kickoff is not returned. Because
in the interest of saving time?
In the interest of not getting to the two-minute warning.
Yes.
Because if the Vikings run first down before the two-minute warning, then the clock stops. Then the Bears call a timeout after the second down. And then clock runs after the third. And all of a sudden, you're getting the ball back with 50 seconds,
you're
a minute left.
You're stealing a timeout if you play it the way you're describing.
So Ben Johnson tells Cairo Santos to put it to the back of the end zone, and he doesn't. It lands, what, about the E on the Bears' new nifty Navy end zones?
Yeah. And whoever returned that for Minnesota, T. Chandler, that player, it seemed like he hesitated for a second, and then he realized, or someone yelled to him from the sideline, that bringing it out was the right move, and it really was.
So the act of bringing it out runs the clock to a minute 55, and then all of a sudden the Bears, you know, they burn their timeout, and then they watch the Vikings bleed the clock, and by the time the Bears get the ball back, there's 9 seconds left. Ben, after the game, was not very happy with that turn of events. And I talked to Cairo after the game about missing the kick. You know, if the Bears are going to be the 500-ish team that you and I think they're going to be, you got to be able to win a little bit on the margins here. And for your most veteran, your third most veteran player, Cairo, probably, and certainly your most reliable player, period, over the last 4 years, to both miss a field goal and then screw up that end game thing, boy, that's not doing you any favors.
No, and Cairo Santos, like almost everybody else on the roster, is really up for evaluation this year, because Ben Johnson's going to be the coach again next year. Mm-hmm. And Ben Johnson is having just an increased role, an increased sway on personnel. And that's going to continue whether they win or lose this year. When they get to the end of this year, if they're, 11-6, they're going to be like, wow, Ben Johnson knows what he's doing. We're going to let him have a lot of say over personnel. If they get to the end of this year and they're 4-13, they're going to say, well, we know Ben Johnson's not the problem, so we better do whatever he wants to fix it. Right. I mean, Cairo to even Caleb in a way, I still think no matter what happens this year, Caleb's their starter going for week one, 2026. But everybody is up for review right now mm-hmm. under Ben Johnson, unless they're guys that Ben Johnson brought in.
You and I both, I think, admire Cairo because he has mastered a stadium that's killed a lot of kickers off.
Toughest stadium to kick in the league, and he is the best in history at it.
And he said today that, you know, there's that quarter break before he's lining up to kick the 50-yarder. And, you know, he's improved his distance mm-hmm. this offseason. So he said he was licking his chops. He said, I have an extra couple minutes with the quarter break to kind of look at the kick. And, you know, it felt like, you know, it felt like a chip shot to him, even though it was 50 yards. And he just pushed it right and didn't hit it the right way. And not to blame a meltdown on a kicker, because that's usually, it's usually not the wisest move. But boy, that opened the door for the Vikings a little bit. And kudos to them for actually kicking the door in when they got there.
That is, again, though, like you, when you mentioned the idea of blaming the kicker, that is, please everybody remember, as Patrick mentioned earlier, that is a possession in which they had first and 10 at the Minnesota 24.
Yep. And they're lining up for a 50-yard field goal because, to quote Matt Nagy, I don't have a play for 3rd and 30.
Yeah. Cairo Santos isn't the one that dragged it back to midfield like that.
J.J. McCarthy's final numbers, nothing too impressive. 13 for 20 for 143 yards, but he threw for 2 touchdowns and ran for 1 more. Not a bad outing for the LaGrange Park native.
It is a pretty good performance when you consider he had almost nothing going through 3 quarters.
I think he had a pass rating in the 20s at some point during this game. Jason, a short week before the Lions come up. I think we're safe in saying that if the Bears play like this against the Lions, it's not going to go well.
It might not go well no matter what. That they're going to be really overmatched, I think. A lot has been made of everything the Lions lost mm-hmm. in their coaching staff, with Aaron Glenn leaving to the Jets and Ben Johnson leaving to the Bears. I don't think that one game losing on the road to Green Bay, a very, very good Green Bay team, is indicative of their collapse. I think this is a Lions team that, what'd you say earlier, someone was licking their chops, Cairo yeah. Santos? I think it's a Lions team that's licking their chops to go back home, face the Bears, face Ben Johnson, face Caleb Williams. I think that the Lions are going to be on 11 for that game.
And it's early to say this, but the Lions can't go 0-2, can they? Like, if anything, I'd feel better about this spot for the Bears if the Lions had somehow managed to beat the Packers on Sunday. Before we go, Jason, you were there, and then you were in the Lions locker room. Anything about Ben Johnson that might lift the spirits of your average Bears fan at this moment?
No, I think that the Lions are very eager to get their shot at Ben Johnson, and I'm sure he feels the same way.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm sure this is... There was an interview with him. I saw him on camera, and it was mentioned to him that Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jahmyr Gibbs were kind of chuckling at some clips of what they had seen in a Bears preseason game, and been like, "Yeah, we've seen all this before from Ben," and kind of unimpressed. And then Ben Johnson that information was being told to Ben Johnson, and he was like, you could see him kind of smirking a little bit. You could see him getting kind of that defiant look in his face, like these are preseason game plans, they're not serious, we're going to have some real stuff, just wait. I mean, I would have to think he's got this instinct probably to throw everything he's got at the Lions. But again, can you do that with this Bears team? Is this Bears team ready for what Ben Johnson would like to call against the Lions? One thing I do hope you see this week or hear about, or I hope it happens for the Bears' sake, is Ben Johnson should be spending quite a bit of time in the defensive meetings, because while Ben Johnson, you know, while it's a different offense there with John Morton, Ben Johnson knows this personnel so well. I mean, Ben Johnson should be able to give Dennis Allen a list of all of Jared Goff's fears.
I suspect that they did that in July.
Yeah.
And real quick, Ben story before we go, if I may. You had a Tulane shirt on the other day, right?
Yeah. My alma mater.
And you walk up to put your tape recorder down at Ben's podium. And he looks at you and goes, "Tulane, huh?" And you go, "Yeah." And you say, "Did you tell him you went there, maybe?" And he said, he brought up the thing with Northwestern.
He said, "Don't disrespect him."
And the idea and the backstory is Tulane accused Northwestern of disrespecting the city of New Orleans for not allowing them to wear the
retro jerseys they wanted to wear to honor the Hurricane Katrina team.
Yes.
And then Tulane smacked them.
Absolutely.
And then said, "That's what you." Then their coach says, "That's what you get. You know when you disrespect the city of New Orleans." And so Ben Johnson, I'm surprised he watches enough to be able to call back to that.
But this is my point. I don't think it's because he's a college football fan. I think he probably appreciates the motivation. I think in his head he went like, "Well, that Tulane coach came up with a pretty good thing to get his players fired up." Kind of real or imagined. Maybe I'm putting too much out there on Ben. But when you talk about somebody who's so competitive and somebody who is so driven, I think he probably looked at Tulane and went, "Well done."
It's not apples to apples, but when I used to cover the Miami Heat, it was always a big deal when they would go play at Cleveland, mm-hmm. because it was a nasty environment for LeBron. Mm-hmm. And everybody, the entire team, including the coach, kind of took that on when they went there. Mm-hmm. It was almost, you know, like we got to rally around our guy
right.
in this hostile arena. And Ben Johnson didn't leave with all of the hatred and negativity that LeBron left Cleveland. But when I asked Ben Johnson last month about Detroit week two, his comment was kind of like that. Like, we're going to go into a place that's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere. They're going to be saying all kinds of horrible things to me, and I'm looking forward to seeing how our guys respond to that.
It's the guy who chose to go to a rival, so I don't blame them for doing that. Jason, it'll be a fun week. This week, certainly more fun than the second half of the Monday night game. During the week, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun Times website, in print, and anywhere else you may see or hear us. He is Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.